I guess they had to drop Joe Jackson's name in there. It was already plainly obvious, but I thought it would be too on the nose at first to just drop his name.
I thought that was on the nose, but I feel like it was on the nose. I feel it's on the nose on purpose, though.
Do you think it's because people will be too slow? Some people will be too slow out there.
Some people are still too slow.
Why do you think they dropped it?
For the obvious reasons, to make sure that your suspicions were valid in case you were, you know, lost.
But every black person should know about that story, right? Even if you're not from this country. I'm not from this country.
I mean, some people are young.
Oh, for the young people watching. Mm-hmm. Okay. Never mind. Because this show is it leans black. Do you think people got the Breakfast Club reference?
I have to watch that clip. I don't get the Breakfast Club reference. I've never seen the Breakfast Club.
Oh, well, so the thing about it is Emilio Estevez's character in Breakfast Club, he's like that because his father is abusive.
Okay, you have to explain that one for me.
Okay.
Every time I bring up my favorite movie or song, y'all call my shit corny. You act like I don't have no taste and no flavor. I'm a Luddite or some bullshit like that. What kind of particular shit is that? It's the shit I like. That's what I like. That's my type of shit. You know? Why don't you know the office just say so all night? It's showtime.
All right, I'm recording right now. So let's get this party started.
I'm coming out, so you.
Well, all right.
We just went from Wakanda to white people to pink, who used us and abused us and threw us away. Well, it wasn't really her. I don't know if I blame her directly. I don't know. The pink thing is weird. Do you know about pink?
Yes, I do know about pink. I know that.
Do you know that she started that everything they accused? What's his face? Bruno Mars of Pink Ashley did it.
Yeah, that's true.
But the thing that's is, true. It well, because Pink started out in an R&B group, and she signed to LaFace Records, which you know is based in Atlanta. It's L.A. Reid and Babyface, and they liked her and fired the rest of the girls, and so they made her a solo art act. And you know, her first album was all R&B, basically sounded like leftover TLC records, and the second one. Because after that album, which is time for her to do her second one, LaFace Records had been absorbed into Arista because L.A. Reid had become the president of Arista Records, which was the like not the distributor, not the parent company. LaFace was independent, but Arista had a share, like a I think he might have owned half at the time. But when L.A. Reid became head of, then first Arista bought the rest of LaFace. Then L.A. Reid became president of Arista. So they deactivated LaFace and put all the LaFace artists on Arista. So TLC, Outkast, Goody Mob, Tony Braxton, et cetera, so forth, and Pink. When Pink went to Arista, she used that opportunity to basically beg L.A. Reid to let her make a album that sounded more like the music she liked, which is, you know, Mark II music. So her second album and her third and fourth and so forth from there are, you know, they're pinker. No pun intended. So we don't know. I'm not sure if it's fair to blame her or L.A. Reid for her first album being, you know, a cultural appropriation. But yeah, so Atlanta, sorry.
Yeah, it's...
That's a hard one, isn't it?
Oh, my God. Okay. Okay, so here's what we're going to do. First of all, let's introduce the show. Welcome, everybody. This is the Say Something Nice Atlanta Season 2 review with your host. I am Ali, and I am joined by Brandon.
Hi, Brandon.
And we are reviewing Atlanta Season 2, Episode 6, entitled Teddy Perkins.
Mm-hmm.
This this particular episode, the writers, essentially it was just Donald Glover. He wrote this episode.
Yeah, he wrote this episode. And the usual director, Hiro, oh gosh, what's this man's name? I'm on the...
Hiro Murai.
Yeah, he directed it.
So yeah.
First of all, before we get into the review, give them all the enemies.
This is a very different episode from what I'm used to on Atlanta. And I think if there's anything I can really point out, especially with Donald Glover and his creative team, is that they strive to not give you the same thing all the time. They strive to break out of any kind of expectation that you might have. They strive to one-up themselves each time. And I think that is something that really attracts me and lures me in and fills me with anticipation every time there's a new episode of Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
Brandon, what do you think?
Listen, this episode was good as hell. Like, it's obviously not what people were expecting at all. Because I've seen a lot of confusion on the timelines. But I'll be perfectly honest, like, it was a masterwork. It was scary. It was super scary. Like, I was legitimately, like, not like screaming terrified, but like creeped all the way out. And the episode actually went there, like all the way there.
Yeah.
Because
there was some definite twists. Things I thought were going one way, and then it just sort of
went the entire other way.
Turned a hard left.
It might have turned multiple hard lefts, as a matter of fact.
Oh, yeah. This is one of those episodes you definitely have to stay buckled in, or you'll get whiplash.
And I think that's part of the reason, like, before we get into review, we should mention, like, the odd way, not odd, the unusual way this episode was broadcast, because I'm assuming you didn't watch it on broadcast.
Yes.
All right. So, but first of all, like, we knew from a couple of days ago when Lakeith Stanfield tweeted that this was going to be Darius' solo episode. Like, at the beginning of the season, Donald Glover said that he was basing this season of Atlanta, called Robin Season, on Tiny Toons, How I Spent My Summer Vacation. I couldn't even get that out. Tiny Toons, How I Spent My Summer Vacation. Have you seen that? It was a direct-to-video animated movie starring the Tiny Toons from 1991 or 2. I think 92.
I don't remember.
Basically, what it's about is about, it's separate stories of how each Tiny Toons character spends summer vacation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they start at the same point in, they start together, end together, but the stories themselves are basically all separate. So I guess that's how sort of kind of approaching the episode, where everybody has like their own different like episode, more or less, to focus on them and what's going on with them inside their head and stuff. That's why we got, you know, the Vans episode and Helen. We got Alfred's episode with Barbershop with Bibby. And we have the Darius episode here with Teddy Perkins. And when they broadcast it on FX, they broadcast it straight through with no commercials.
Interesting.
There's not a single commercial. Like, and you'll notice the episode doesn't break.
Yeah, it doesn't.
Yeah, it basically ran as a 34-minute short film altogether. I'm going to assume it was sponsored by U-Haul.
I mean... I mean, come on. Oh, they were featured prominently.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so this episode, I think... The funny thing is, and I'm sure you all can hear the tone of our voices, this isn't an episode where we were laughing all the way through.
Oh, no, we were shook.
This episode had me feeling some type of way. I cringed a lot. And then I got nervous. And I got a little freaked out. then when I saw this Thursday night, I had to stifle back a scream towards the end because
just one.
I didn't see that coming, and why y'all do this to my poor Darius? Why this can't happen to Tracy? Yeah. So
I think it'd be best, because we're going to probably need to spend a lot of time digging into each and every scene in depth. But this is what we'll do. I will go ahead first and just give like a brief overall synopsis and just hit all the major beats. Then we'll go scene by scene.
Okay.
Just so that we can sort of kind of know where the roadmap is going. So,
yeah.
Darius,
let's do it.
The episode begins with Darius in like a small, like, I guess like part shop. I'm not sure what side of town he's on, but it's far enough north that they sell Confederate flag hats.
Clearly. this is not in the heart of Atlanta.
No, it's not.
It sure is not. Cause what you surely won't do
is wear one of them hats inside the perimeter.
I wish you would.
I wish a motherfucker would. and so it looks like he bought all candies, what it's like. So he buys this Confederate flag hat as he leaves, and he buys a red marker with it. The flag hat says Southern Made. And he takes the marker and blots out enough letters so that he puts the hat on and it says, "You mad."
I love it.
We'll get back to that in a second.
You know what's about to get on the market, right? What's going to be hot right now?
That hat.
Okay.
And so he takes a drive. I'm not sure what day they shot this, but it was one of the days after it snowed.
Oh, is it because of the aerial shot?
Yeah, there's snow on the ground.
Yeah.
And so he drives. Clearly, this place is somewhere in Buckhead or in Paces, which are in Northwest Atlanta. These are the only places that we have houses that old that are that nice.
Oh, okay.
Like, there's other places in town where they have, well, maybe like Sandy Springs, but that's sort of kind of adjacent to like Buckhead. Basically, that's where like the old money people stay.
Mm.
That's where the governor's mansion is.
Okay.
You've been by there, right?
I have.
Yeah. One time a friend came to visit and me and him and like the girl he was dating at the time, we just rode around up and down West Paces Ferry Road looking at all the fancy ass houses.
Well, we did that.
Oh yeah, we did that too, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it looked like the houses that you'd see on Love and Hip Hop.
Yeah, except they're not rented.
Ooh, savage.
Most of the people who are in Love and Hip Hop do not have enough money to own those houses. The people, the rich black people who own them houses are not going to be on Love and Hip Hop, generally speaking.
They surely won't.
No offense to anybody on Love, but I mean, I'm speaking facts. Look at Chateau Charest, for example. That's Real Housewives, but same difference. I think I probably drove by Chateau Charest at least 4 or 5 times and not realize which one it was. But so Darius goes to knock on the door, but the door's already open. And he meets the apparent homeowner who is Theodore Perkins. But he says, "Please call me Teddy," and reaches out 2 hands to shake. At this point, we aren't supposed to be able to tell if this is a white man played by a black man in blackface, because of course, you know, spoiler alert, Donald Glover plays Teddy Perkins, or if it's a black man who's suffering from a very severe case of vitiligo. Uh-huh. But basically, he sits down with Darius, they shoot the shit a little bit, talk about rap music. He has a boiled ostrich egg for breakfast.
Oh God.
Hold your disgust. And basically, like, this guy comes off super, super eccentric. And when he leaves to go, but he points out that, you know, the piano, because Darius is there because he was on a biohacking message board. We'll get back to that in a little bit. And somebody mentioned that their boss was giving away a free piano. And it turns out it's this piano. And apparently it belonged to Teddy Perkins' brother, Benny Hope, who was a popular and successful jazz pianist back in the 70s and 80s, as evidenced by the fact that he knew Stevie Wonder and Nina Simone and Al Jarreau, et cetera, so forth. And so when Teddy Perkins goes to get Darius a glass of water, Darius starts wandering around like the foyer area and everything, and like in the lounge, and looks around. Oh, he's being watched on a security camera. And so he hears the piano in use. So he wanders upstairs to where and he wanders past a whole lot of pictures on the wall and everything to the room where the piano is. And Teddy peeks his head out and says that, you know, his brother can't be disturbed because he's suffering from a very severe skin condition. And so he's like, I'm going to bring Darius's water. And the whole thing is just weird to Darius because, you know, he's staring at this guy who clearly this guy has his skin has something like
vitiligo. About his skin.
Either vitiligo or he bleached himself, one or the two. It could be both. So we can talk about Michael in a second. And so he's convinced that Teddy Perkins and Benny Hope are the same person, that, you know, he's just depressed and developed this extra personality. It's just weird. So he calls Alfred on the phone while Alfred's in the drive-thru line at Crystal's.
Oh my God.
Why is he such a nigga?
Everything.
He is such a regular
him.
Ass nigga.
Everything about him.
It's absolutely wonderful. And he tells Alfred that this dude looks like Sammy Sosa. And Alfred apparently hasn't been on Twitter in a very long time. So
clearly. How do you not know Alfred? Because when he said Sammy Sosa, I died.
And so he tells him to Google Sammy Sosa hat, and Earn does it in the backseat. And him, Alfred, and Tracy all have a good laugh off of it.
So funny.
Before he goes back in, and when he comes back in, Teddy Perkins takes an impromptu Polaroid of Darius. And introduces Darius to a room that he wants to have as a gift shop, because he wants to turn this house into a museum. He said he's already spotted paperwork to make it a place on the National Historic Register or whatever it is that you put old places on. He also shows Darius a room that's going to be dedicated to his father and other fathers of, you know, popular people. Because apparently, like, you know, he tells him, like, his father basically beat him and his brother to try to make them, like, the best pianists they could be.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very clear he has a whole lot of contempt and hate for his father that he's compartmentalized into. That's what needed to happen, sort of a thing. By this point, Darius is completely creeped out. He's like, can we just sign a paperwork and I can get out of here? Because you can tell Teddy's starting to crack at this point a little bit.
Yeah, so, you could also tell that his feelings got hurt.
Yeah, when discussing his father. And so Darius signed paperwork up. He notices blood on the piano, fresh blood on the piano. God.
Why did he touch it?
It's like Scooby-Doo's episode where Fred touches what he thought was blood, but it turned out to be paint. I'm like, Freddy, why did you touch it anyways? And so Darius takes the piano and puts it in the elevator. At this point, I thought this episode was going to turn into the black version of the Music Box from Laurel and Hardy, that short I showed you that you didn't care for.
Mm-hmm.
But they carried the piano down the stairs, up the stairs.
But mercifully, it did not.
Why are you like this? Leave Laurel and Hardy alone. So he takes the elevator, but it goes past the first floor into the basement. And I was like, oh, shit. This will turn into a horror movie for real. And in the basement is Benny Hope, or who, at this point, Darius just thinks that it's Teddy Perkins in a wheelchair with his face masked up. So Benny Hope has a blackboard, a little handheld blackboard. He writes in chalk on it, Teddy, kill us both. And Darius is like, so what you want me to do? And he writes on it, gun and addict. So Darius is like, well, fine, I'll go get your gun. And so he goes up, takes the piano out to his car.
He's like, let me just take this. Let me put my piano in the car first.
Yeah.
Then I'll get your gun.
But he notices that Teddy has moved the car, the Benny Hope car, to where he can't open up the latch on the, like, you know, the back part of the U-Haul to open it up.
Right.
So he goes and finds Teddy Perkins,
upstairs in not the trophy room, a different room where he's watching.
I guess that's like a theater room.
Yeah, he's watching like a Super 8 of his dad training them, but it's only one guy there. It's not two.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so he's like, you're blocking me. I can't open up the U-Haul." And he's like, "I'm sorry, I'll move it." Question mark. And Teddy Perkins is like, "So Darius asked him where the bathroom is. He's like, "Oh, it's right next to the door for the attic. I was just up there, and you know what I found?" And he pulls out the fucking rifle.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, "Darius, like, you're lucky. You won. You're gonna be my sacrifice."
Oh God!
So he takes Darius downstairs into the foyer area, forces him to handcuff himself inside the chair, because what he's basically going to do, make it like a home invasion, and because like I think Darius pointed out when he's on the phone with Alfred, is like, I think this dude really wants, he's super depressed and just wants to die, because he called him on the phone when he's going up with the piano, because like this dude is super depressed and wants me to kill him, and that appears to be what the case is. And so while he's handcuffed himself, Darius tells him, you know, like, your father didn't have to do that to you. I had daddy issues myself. You know, what he should have said was that he was sorry. And he says, "I'm sorry." And so right before, you know, anything happens, the elevator opens up.
Yeah, because that does not convince him.
Not at all. And shock and horror, Benny Hope is his own person. And Benny Hope takes the rifle and shoots the fuck out of Teddy. And then he asks Darius, because Darius, when he back in the house before, you know, to talk to Teddy, he is black, so he picked up a poker from the fireplace to defend himself. He asks Darius for the poker and takes it and uses that to set the gun up to shoot himself in the head and kill himself. And so Darius is sitting here, you know, the witness to a double murder, a double murder suicide. And so the police come and take the two bodies and the piano.
And the piano.
And so Darius just has to drive up in the U-Haul by himself alone with no piano. And that's the episode. Okay, now we can dive into it. Because Nick.
Oh, my God.
Because it's funny, because the only shot that was really promoted for this episode was the one of Darius with the trucker, with the Confederate trucker hat on, with the "You Mad."
Okay. The shot that was promoted online I saw was Darius, the narrow shot of him in the hallway when he was snooping around.
Yeah. And so... there's not really much to say in the first part of that, other than say that a white lady did look at him real sideways, because she's like, "Why is he wearing that hat?"
Oh, it's fine.
It's perfectly fine. Fucking fine.
It's for you, babe.
But it's important to point out that when Darius gets into the car, both like the movie, I mean, it basically is a movie, but the episode opens and closes with two Stevie Wonder songs from his 1972 album, Music of My Mind. I think there's a lot of clues to this whole thing. Like, I'll break them down one by one. So, everybody knows Stevie Wonder is, right?
They better.
I need to, in detail, who he is. So, Stevie Wonder, of course, was a blind child prodigy who came to Motown when he was 10 years old in 1960. Got a deal. In 62, became a child star and was like a teen star throughout the rest of the 60s. You know, he had big hits like Fingertips, Uptight, Everything's All Right, My Sherry Amore, and everything like that. By the time he was 20 years old, he wanted to do more advanced, like soul music, experiment more and sort of kind of broaden his horizons. But he was signed to Motown and Motown didn't really play that. So when Stevie turned 21 in 1971, he basically, like back then, I don't know if it's still the case, but if you sign a contract at the age of 21, below the age of 21, when you turn 21, you were allowed to disavow it.
Oh, okay.
So he disavowed his contract in 71 and just left Motown and went to New York City and just hung out because he knew that every other label would try to sign him. Because by the time he had, you know, a bunch of, you know, top 10 hits already. And he recorded two albums up there in New York. Because basically he wanted to go back to Motown, but he wanted to do it on his own terms. The first one that he recorded was this one, Music of My Mind.
Hold on a second. Do you think Motown would have accepted him back after he did that?
They did.
No, but theory, like, if you disavowed your contract and just left, and Motown's like, hey, Stevie, baby, where are you going? I'm going to New York. What? You gonna leave us? Yeah, I'm going to New York. I mean, isn't that gonna leave bad blood?
To some degree, yeah, but they want money, don't they?
Okay.
They want to keep one of their biggest artists, don't they? So he recorded Music of My Mind and Talking Book, which, you know, when he came back to Motown, those are the first two albums he put out. And they were big hits, and they sort of kind of, they were the start of what's considered his classic period, which ran through the, most of the rest of the 70s, with the pinnacle being Songs in the Key of Life in 1976. The first song in the episode is called Sweet Little Girl, which is on one side, which is the end of side one of the album. The episode ends with Evil, which is the end of side two of the album. And it means obvious that, you know, one is an upbeat, happy song. The other one is like a low, a slow, you know, sort of kind of like depressing record, which is obvious. This is the album that Superwoman is on. Superwoman, Where Were You When I Needed You? You've heard that song before. You probably don't recognize it. I'll play it for you after we get off.
Okay.
But it's one of those songs that you have to, just being a person who goes shopping. You heard it. And you probably heard other people cover it in, like, you know, like American Idol and shit like that. But yeah. And it's the Stevie Wonder thing is important because when he pulls up, he's still playing the song. So when he gets into the house and meets Teddy Perkins and shakes both hands, he's like, Mr. Wonder.
Oh boy.
And he's like, yeah, I like Stevie Wonder because he's good for long drives because his songs are long. So when you first saw Teddy Perkins, what were your first thoughts?
My first thoughts is this is a fake face. This face does not seem natural. It looks like it's a mask. It looks like it can't move. It's not. Doesn't look like it can be very expressive. Something's up with this guy's face.
Did you know that it was Donald Glover playing the part? Which I mean, I wouldn't have been able to tell.
I did not. But so that's good on them. The only thing I can really. Now that you told me it's Donald Glover, the only thing I can really say is maybe I can see it a little bit in the cheeks.
Yeah. Cheekbones. Yeah, but otherwise you would not be able to tell.
Yeah, that's all I can get.
But yeah, so he goes into the parlor, not the foyer, parlor. That's what white people call it, the parlor.
Yeah, because Darius makes a point to say that I've never been in a place that has a parlor before.
Yeah. And so he, Teddy offers him a glass of water. And so he reaches over and turns on what we think is an intercom. And it's like, Darius would like a glass of water when you have a moment. And clicks it off. I'll do this now. Later on, he's like, hey, is your butler going to bring me my glass of water? He's like, oh, I don't have a butler. I just use this to record things so I can remember them. For example, and listen, I'll read you the other messages on this thing. Because I cried.
Please do.
Finish that hat for Dionne Warwick.
Oh,
wash your hands immediately. And then Darius will like a glass of water when you have a moment. Why is he making hats for Dionne Warwick? It's Is that going to help her find a way to San Jose?
Brandon.
Do you know the way to
Brandon.
San Jose? I've got a lot of friends in San Jose.
Sorry. Anywho.
I remind of a Paul Mooney joke. Paul Mooney had a joke where it was like, because, you know, Dionne Warwick, for a very long time, she was the celebrity spot, like, face of the Psychic Friends Network. And Paul Mooney was like, how's she going to tell anybody about they psychic future or past? And he called her a B word. This woman don't know her way to San Jose.
Bye. That is some petty shit.
That's Paul Mooney for you.
Wow.
But yeah. So when Teddy tells Darius that the piano used to belong to Benny Hope, his brother.
And so wait, I just want to point out that I would like a machine like that. I need it.
Use your phone.
I can use the recorder in my phone though.
Yeah, that's what it's for, voice notes.
Yeah, but that's, yeah.
That's what Steve and them designed it for.
Okay.
Use your technology. Because like, and when Darius sees like the pictures on the wall, he's like, oh shit, is that Keith Jarrett? Keith Jarrett is a jazz pianist. As is Ahmad Jamal. I mean, you know who Al Jarreau is, right? He just died recently.
So all these people he was naming
are famous black musicians.
Even though you don't know that they're famous black musicians, it's pretty obvious that by the shock on Darius's face and the tone of his voice, that these people are big names in music.
They're big names in like jazz music and like soul music from like the 70s and stuff. Like Darius is obviously like somebody who's like a music head. He's a music enthusiast, yeah. So these won't be names that kids under 25 would know offhand unless they're music enthusiasts as well. Except for Stevie Wonder. You know Stevie Wonder. You might know Nina Simone.
Right.
But these are like if you were like a black person into music, like these names should be at least recognizable. Like if like our friend Dante, he writes for for Soul Bounce. He would have caught all those in a second. But yeah, so you know, Darius is, you know, he's dutifully impressed. And Teddy Perkins tells a story that apparently Ahmad Jamal told his brother, and is like, he said your brother plays pain better than anyone, which is sort of a thematic thread in the story.
Yep.
And
it
so
triggers, it yeah. triggers a little. Yeah, snowball
yeah.
rolling on a hill.
Yeah, Darius asks if Benny is no longer with us. And he's like, oh, no, he's alive. He just stays here. You know, he has a very advanced skin condition. That's why it's so dark in here. And because he can't go out into the sunlight anymore.
Right.
And he's like, and Darius is like, he must get depressed. And Teddy says, it's not easy, but who knows? Maybe one day we'll get a great album out of it. A masterpiece. Yeah.
That's so, when I started to.
You got really, the hairs on your back started standing up, didn't they?
It's just like, okay, yeah. Let's turn his misery into something that can bring in some money. Okay.
Yeah. And so when he goes to get the water, Darius starts wandering around like the other side of the parlor, like which I guess would be like the study. Is I guess really what it is. He looks around and they're like, nobody's clearly been in the study for a very long time because everything's dusty and Darius coughs and sneezes because of the dust.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, he's being watched on camera.
Clearly. it's a very...
I legit very... was like, they made this episode because Lakeith was in Get Out, right?
Pretty much. You're like, you were really good in that. You know what you could do really well? Doing that character again. Yeah. Yeah, they're like, oh, we've seen you. Yeah. But it's that really creeped me out though. But okay. Right. Yeah.
And so when he hears the piano, of course, he goes upstairs, you know, and like Teddy barely opens up the door. And because he's like, Benny is still sleeping. He needs his rest. But, you know, Darius is like, I just heard the piano, though.
Yeah, I literally just heard a piano playing.
And I'm pretty sure he looks, tries to look past Teddy and sees a glimpse of like an empty wheelchair. Let me just double check that. Yeah, he does. Because when he walked up the hallway, he saw like all the pictures of like them as they were younger, a picture with them with Bill Clinton. And yeah. Then like one with like the skin condition.
Exactly. So you clearly see that, if that doesn't confirm for you, Benny's black.
Right. And so is his brother.
Even even before that, you would have seen the pictures that Darius was looking at on the downstairs.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You would have seen that, okay, these are clearly two very black men.
Right. Well, we see at this point is one man.
Oh, we just see one person and we see, oh, okay, so that's, see, right. this is Benny and, you know, yeah. Okay.
Right. And also, we forgot to mention, so Teddy's breakfast, his blood ostrich egg that he takes a little hammer to and cracks open starts picking out all, I guess, like the unedible parts, which, listen, I was disgusted.
I was very disgusted.
It was just nasty. I don't know what the prop department did, what that stuff actually is. Whatever it is,
This is why I have such an aversion to hard-boiled eggs.
And it's funny because when he left, Darius is like, okay, I can't sit next to that thing. Let me get up. Yeah.
The only eggs I can have are sunny side up or scrambled. I am not trying to do that. Nope, don't do it. Nope. That's going to gross me out. Any kind of congealing liquid thing.
So what did y'all do for Easter?
Brandon,
on the island.
Listen, I want to make it very clear to you.
What?
Y'all are the only one that fucks with egg hunts.
Y'all did an egg hunt on the island, all that scenery y'all got.
I want to make it very clear to you. Okay? Bunnies aren't pets. They're for eating.
Or for escaping hunters.
They're for eating. And, yeah. Y'all egg hunts and taking good eggs and painting them and then throwing them away. Wow. Okay. That was my rant. Continue.
But you can make colors. Okay. Yes, we egg hunt. Me and my sister and my mom, we would boil the eggs and dye them different colors using like the little egg color thing.
People told me that so many times the kids would miss eggs and then you would just find an egg randomly like months later.
Oh no, my mom made us find them all.
Okay, because I was just like, what a waste.
I mean, those were happy childhood memories, you know, because like in the spring before my allergy set in, like the flowers would all bloom. Like we had all these, what do you call them, purple flowers?
I don't know.
I guess they're azaleas.
Azaleas,
purple. Like on the front yard, it'd be beautiful and like so, like a lot of like purple eggs would like hide flowers and just happy childhood memories.
Wouldn't you be happier if you were to eat the eggs?
We kept a few to eat.
Okay. Incidentally, azaleas are purple.
Yeah, very beautiful purple too. Getting back to the episode, we're at the phone call where Alfred calls. Darius calls Alfred. He's like, "Man, you still ain't got that piano yet?"
First of all, I'm very happy that Darius decided that he was not going to be one of those black people, and he decided to call. He decided to call a friend, right. Let him know, "Hey, there's some creepy shit going on in here. I just want to let you know that I am safe. I will be getting that piano, come hell or high water. Please give me some advice."
Right? Because he's like, "It's got colored keys, man. I want it."
That's right.
Because he says if he leaves, he'll regret it. And he has a two regret life limit pact.
And I was like, I had to write that. And I was like, what? Explain that. And then right as he said it, Alfred was like, what? And I was like, yes, thank you, Alfred. Please get him to explain what the hell is that?
So basically he's like, if I have more than two regrets in life, somebody has to take me out.
And then, to which Alfred's like, how would people even know that you've already made two regrets or you've had two regrets? He's like, because I would tell them, as a matter of fact, Lee. Like, Darius, you're the only one in your head. Please, do not listen. He said that in a condescending way, Brandon. Like, duh. I was like, no, not duh.
To be honest, though, I don't blame him.
Oh, my God.
I get it.
She Am said, I weird? Because I would tell them. Because I would tell them. I was like, okay, Darius. Oh, boy. But yeah, and then comes the joke later on where he explains what's going on and what the guy looks like.
Yeah, because he's like, because he's told after this whole story why he's in the drive-thru line at Crystal's and the dudes, you know, trying to get a picture. And
I love how there's all this stuff happening on Alfred's side, because he's trying to talk, and then the guy in the window of Crystal's is asking him for shit like, man, do you want some extra this? Or can I get a picture with you?
Yeah.
Or he's in the back going, hey, yo, it's Pep Boy out here. I was like, do you not have customers?
He was like, because Alfred ordered a five cheese Crystal combo. He's like, it's cheaper with fries. I don't want no fries.
I don't want
and
no Chris fries.
And Tracy's like, that's that rich shit, nigga. You don't know that's about that.
I would throw something. I will throw it. Why are they like this?
No. But yeah, so Alfred's confused about this Teddy, the white dude, God, or the black dude. and Darius says, well, we're all thinking. He's like, you know what? I don't even think Teddy exists, bro.
Wait, is he saying that Benny doesn't exist or Teddy?
Well, I think he's basically, I feel like Benny created Teddy to make up for the fact that he made himself look like a ghoul.
Right.
He's like, a ghoul? He's like, it's really bad, man. It's like somebody left Sammy Sosa in the dryer.
In the dryer. Brandon, the noise I made.
Now listen, I don't know whether or not he actually has vitiligo, so I don't mean to make fun of anybody who actually has vitiligo, because, you know, as actual condition, I know people with vitiligo, you know, and it's serious. But, like, I mean, there are treatments where they can give you, like, you know, super high SPF sun thing, so you can go out for a while at least in the sun. You don't have to stay inside of a dark house. Mm-hmm. So it's unclear to us as the audience whether or not he actually A, has vitiligo, or B, does it bleached himself. Because with Michael Jackson, he did both. He had vitiligo, but he wanted to be all one color.
Yeah. So, and he was like, well, I'm turning pale anyway. Might as well just
bleach it all off.
Yeah.
Because he got tired of, like, lightening his foundation more. That's a lot of people don't. People think Michael Jackson just wanted to be white. Michael Jackson wanted to be Diana Ross. And he just went too far. And then as his vitiligo set in more and more, he just, you know, started. He did start bleaching himself at one point, you know, but he had to keep on doing it. But, you know, he still had black patches on, like, his arms and his legs and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, so when Paperboy asked Sammy Sosa, I was like, nigga, you know who Sammy Sosa is? But this was just an excuse in the episode for us to get that, for us to have
to get that reaction.
For Earn to Google it and B, for the audience to Google it. I bet you every person who watched this episode Googled Sammy Sosa hat.
I didn't. Really? You think so? Because
Sammy Did you Sosa's, Google it?
No, because.
Google it right now.
What?
Sammy Sosa hat. Do it. I am so glad you did not Google it. I want this live reaction. I want it so bad. Pins and needles.
Oh my God.
You see it? You see, like, you're like, whoa, what happened? What is this? Because his hat and his skin are the same color in the picture.
Oh my God.
Because he bleached himself so much. Oh. They say he looked like a white man's dick.
Yes. Why are they so savage?
Afro said he was under a scab.
What? Yes. He said, why does he look like someone what's under a scab? I said, not a scab. Oh my God. Wow. Yeah, but they had fun in that one. Yeah. Really did have fun with that reference. Because I'm sure people who are watching the episode, they probably were trying to liken, quote unquote, well, at this point, we're thinking, we're probably suspecting what Darius probably suspects, right? Which is Benny is the real person and he just made up Teddy. So
right. Like a reverse psycho.
Yeah. I guess. Okay. All right.
Yeah. Because okay. Even the way that, like, it's not exact, but the way that at least that Teddy's shots are framed, they sort of kind of match Norman Bates when he's talking to Marion Crane in his parlor. Oh, shit. It's the parlor. Ooh. Come on, Tyler. In Psycho.
They really wanted to hit you with all these references. And yes. I love that. I love that, you know, again, Donald Glover, he's well aware of these things,
right.
These references. And so he's using it to his advantage.
And there was one other one I guess we can do now that people pointed out. So the character's name is Benny Hope, right? The Stevie Wonder songs are both from 1972. Who was another popular artist on Motown in 1972? Who may have been a child prodigy, who may have been abused by his father.
Oh, God. So, all right. So we've gone to this part of the show.
I need to ask him a question first.
Okay, Michael Jackson.
What was one of Michael Jackson's first big solo hits by himself? His first by number himself? One hit. Yeah. It's a male name. It is Ben.
Huh?
Ben. That's the name of the song. Ben.
Okay.
You've never heard Ben.
No, I don't think so.
All right. It's a song from a movie made in 72 about a boy who befriends a killer rat.
Okay.
And the rat's name is Ben. And so it's like a sad song about how good a friend Ben is. It's like, Ben, the two of us need to look no more.
Oh, I know the song.
Both
I know the song.
Found, yeah. I see. I knew you knew it.
Yeah. So, okay, cool.
We already talked about the Polaroid and the.
Mm. Oh, by the way, I love the fact that just FYI,
mm-hmm.
Alfred didn't miss a beat after he got off the phone because that guy tried to put fries in his shit. Yeah. And he was just like, "Take him out.
I put some extra fries in. Take him out.
Take him out.
Nigga, just don't eat him."
He said, "Take him out." Alfred's like, I'm regular and you're going to treat me this way. Moving on.
Right. And so it's interesting when he goes into that makeshift gift shop. First of all, I feel like he put all that shit together while Darius was outside.
You know what? You may not be wrong.
He clearly already had it all, but I feel like that shit was not there.
Because how long does it take to get water? Because this dude, you know what the funny thing is? This dude said he was going to get water, and then he asked all these Christians about the water, right? He went, do you want it bottled or just tap water? And so Darius was like, bottled. And he was like, okay, I'm going to mix three different brands of water together for
like
you.
Like Poland Springs and Voss, and like, God dang.
I was like, it's not that serious. It's not.
Like, he made a water cocktail.
Yeah, and then he gave it to him, and it was like, it's just this little tumbler of water. I'm just like, all that shit for that? Okay. Yeah, you were busy doing something else. Probably right. What Brandon said.
Yeah, because he's like, feel free to tweet a blog spot in the of it. And why does the voice sound like a Welsh Michael Jackson?
I'm not doing this.
A Welsh old Michael Jackson.
I am not doing this. I'm not doing this. All I know is that this dude's his voice. I was just like, man, they're really going in on this on the pop culture reference that they're trying to.
Yeah.
But anyways, continue.
It's so like, what Michael Jackson be like if he was like a creepy old man? If he had lived into like old
creepy old man status.
Yeah. And so he shows Darius what he wants to be one of the key attractions to the museum when he's done with it. And it's an empty room right now with music lessons pinned to the wall, pinned to the door. The doors are like glass doors. And in the center of the room is a mannequin with a suit on it, which is supposed to represent Teddy His Perkins father. And Benny Hope's father. Mm-hmm. Who he talks about, they had to have 3 hours in the morning, 3 hours in the evening, and of piano lessons every day and a quiz on Sunday. And if they didn't perform, they were beat. Mm. And so there's this like, so your dad used to beat you, so you'd be good at piano. And he corrects him, to be good at life. We were his sacrifice.
I'm a little confused over something.
What?
Because initially, when quote unquote Teddy Perkins introduces himself and starts talking about, you know, Benny, he makes it look like as if it was his brother that was
the only pianist.
No, I mean to say, does he say Benny is his brother? Yeah. Does he literally say that?
Yes, he does. And before Darius even sees the pictures, yes.
Because the thing about it is, though, when I was rewatching the episode, he talked like as if, like, oh yes, my brother knew Benny, the owner of the piano.
No. He said Benny is his brother and owned the piano. It was his piano.
Okay. All right, just double checking. All right. Yeah, because I just remember that threw me off and I forgot to ask you at the beginning. Okay. Yeah. So yeah, so we're in the place where his father's suit on the mannequin is. Yeah. And Teddy Perkins goes into
Tony Perkins. Tony Perkins played Norman Bates in Psycho.
Well, I mean they put it out for you. It's writing itself.
Right. But yeah, so this is where the creepiest part starts setting in even more if it hadn't already.
Because you realize that Teddy or Benny, whomever you want to believe, he has a lot to unpack here. He's subdued a lot of probably some deep-seated feelings for his childhood. Mm-hmm. And it's coming out now.
Have you seen my childhood?
It's coming out of her.
It's coming out of her. but yeah, because Darius is like, that seems unnecessary. He's like, most people wouldn't understand. To make an omelet, you have to break a few eggs.
Listen, when Darius said this, right, I was like, please, Darius, do not trigger him. Please be very careful what you say next. Because when it comes to issues like that, anything could just throw somebody like that off.
Right. He's like, my father used to say, great things come from great pain.
From great pain. I was like, oh boy.
I want this wing of the museum to be dedicated to great fathers. My father, Joe Jackson.
Joe Jackson.
Like lampshade hung. Marvin Gaye like Sr., lampshade hung.
he said Tiger Woods' father.
Yeah. Serena Williams' father.
Yes.
Lampshade hung. The father who drops off Emilio Estevez in the Breakfast Club. So I'm going to tell you, do you know about Marvin Gaye Sr. before we go into Emilio Estevez?
I do not, but I know what you told me about Marvin Gaye. So now explain to me what's probably going to lead into or influence
them. The Reverend Marvin Gaye Sr., and his Gaye is spelled like, how you doing? And originally, okay. Marvin Gaye Jr. was as well. He changed his name because
reasons.
No, well, because most of his uncles were, how you doing? And his father was a cross-dresser.
I'm sorry.
His father wore women's clothes, not to become a woman, but because it gave him a sense of sexual satisfaction. And he didn't necessarily do it all the time in private. He did it more in private, but he would come to the door sometimes wearing like women's gowns and things like that. But Marvin Gaye Sr. Was always embarrassed by how soft his son was. Pot, kettle, black, et cetera, so forth.
Really?
And It got worse when Marvin Jr. joined the Moonglows rock and roll band and went into secular music. First as a drummer, if I recall. Yes, as a drummer. And then they got to Motown, and Harvey Fuqua, who was the leader of the Moonglows, became a producer over there. Marvin, of course, became a solo singer and became a star. And, you know, Marvin Gaye's career, which is a story for another podcast, you know, had its ups and downs and everything. But essentially by the early 80s, you know, Marvin had been through a whole lot of terrible things with taxes, you know, two failed marriages, one of which was to a woman when she was 17, you know. And the other one was to Berry Gordy's sister, older sister. And, you know, that's where the Hear My Dear album, all that comes from. And a whole lot of tax evasion stuff. And drug stuff. And so by 1984, Marvin was living with his dad. On the day of April the 1st, 1984, Marvin and his dad got into an argument, a big argument, like a big furniture moving argument. Wow. And Marvin Sr. shot Marvin Jr. dead. The day before Marvin Gaye's 45th birthday.
Oh.
Yeah.
That turned dark.
Yeah. See, it's funny because, like, this actually is a good thing that you don't know that, because a lot of people take that story for granted, like, because they've heard it so many times. But it's good to hear, like, it's good to get a honest reaction to how terrible that tragedy was. Because we're so, I guess, numb to it by now that, you know.
Jesus. No, that puts that scene in this episode so much more in perspective, though.
Right.
It's just, no, man. Jesus. Great fathers. Jeez.
Right. Because that is so weird when you do Marvin Gaye anniversaries, because his day of his death is the day before his birthday. So it's April the 1st, rest in peace, Marvin Gaye. April the 2nd, Marvin Gaye's birthday. And his father was the one who killed him.
And what followed this?
I mean, he went to jail. He killed somebody.
No, but I mean to say, I want to know about the fallout. What's the people's reaction and all that? Like, what's going on?
He killed his son.
Yes, but what did people, how did...
People were freaked out. They were terrified and horrified. He went to jail. Let me see how long. When the police asked Marvin Gaye Sr. if he loved his son, Gaye Sr. softly told them, "Let's say I didn't dislike him." Oops. So he went to prison for...
ever?
No. 6 year suspended sentence, 5 years probation.
What?
During that time, Marvin Gaye's mom divorced him. He eventually moved back into that same house where he killed his son after he got out of jail. Then he went to a nursing home and died at a nursing home in Culver City, California.
Okay, so I'm not satisfied with that. I'm not satisfied with that at all, actually. Wow.
Well, he got a plea bargain, apparently, is what happened. And they found a brain tumor.
Okay.
A benign brain tumor, but a brain tumor nonetheless.
And did they use that?
Yeah.
Oh.
And because Marvin was on drugs. Marvin Jr. Sorry to bring the podcast down, Ali, but yeah, Marvin Gaye was killed by his own father. Is that not known, like on the island?
No, it's not that. Again, I'm not a music head, Brandon.
I know.
How many young people talk about this? I guess it also must be an age.
I mean, there's not much of a gap between us, but, you know, it's enough to where I can sort of see, like, people generally tend to know that Marvin Gaye was killed by his dad. Like, black people. I don't know about white people. I don't know how that works. Black people in America, at least.
I can guarantee you that I can pretty much ask all of my high school class, how did Marvin Gaye die? And they would not be able to tell me. I'm pretty sure. Marvin Gaye is not a topic ever.
Other than, like, if you're sexual healing in, like, a movie or something like that.
I mean, I guess. But, I mean, it's funny how Michael Jackson, everybody knows all about. Like, that's easy. But Marvin Gaye.
Well, Michael Jackson was more popular.
Right. But Marvin Gaye, no. You know, it goes as far as Marvin Gaye, black musician. That's it.
Not even Tammy Terrell.
No.
Ain't no mountain high enough.
No.
What's going on?
That's my mom. That's my mom and father's generation.
Okay. Let's get that's it them. On. Sexual healing.
That's them.
I want you. I heard it through the grapevine. You at least know the songs, right?
We know the songs. We don't necessarily care about the person behind it. You sitting up there, what are you, like 46?
I might as well be giving my taste to music, but yes.
I know. you shocked. Let's go on the street right now. Let's ask some of these young kids. Let's ask them what Marvin Gaye. let's ask them.
But yeah, the fact that he named, I mean, you know Joe. Everybody knows about Joe, right?
Yeah, everybody knows about Joe.
Yeah, he abused Michael. You know, beat him all the time. One time, when he thought Michael was gay, locked him in a room with a prostitute.
Yeah.
And it turned out Michael, because they were Jehovah's Witnesses, everybody except for Joe. Like Captain, the rest of the kids were all Jehovah's Witnesses. Instead of having sex with a prostitute, Michael started witnessing to her. And Joe called him all kinds of a faggot after that, as a result. Because Michael was 15, 16 when that happened.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah.
But it's kind of ugly how people will try to justify all that and say, well, if it wasn't for that, then we wouldn't have gotten this greatness. And I'm like, really?
I feel like somebody's happiness and well-being is more important than music.
And I'm thinking to myself, like, if that's what you get from an abusive father like that, just think if he had actually taken the time to nurture and be emotionally available and sort of like
help build Michael and the other kids up that way.
Push his children with positive reinforcement.
Right.
And stuff like that. Just imagine if that was the case. Because I mean, they were awesome like that. But what would have happened if he had just done it another way?
Right.
You would have probably gotten that and more.
Right.
So yeah, and people justifying Joe's actions by the outcome of
look at the outcome. The boy died at 50.
Well, yeah, but it's almost like as if it's like saying, oh man, you put a lot of pressure on this one orange and
it'll turn into a whole tree.
Yeah, no, you put a lot of pressure on this orange and it gave you just a little bit of orange juice. But our orange juice is the best orange juice you've ever had in your life and you'll never have it again. That's what they're saying. It's like, yeah, he pushed him. You got this. You got an amazing artist out of it. But it was for such a short time. But there will never be another Michael Jackson. You just won't get one. You just won't. I mean, maybe Brandon, you're a music head. So do you have any pushback on that?
No.
So, but yeah, and then of course he brought up the Emilio Estevez's father from
The Breakfast Club. Yeah, which I haven't seen, but you have.
Yeah, so Emilio Estevez's character plays like a high school wrestler in that movie, and the father pushes him because the father used to be a high school athlete as well, and so the father, from what I remember, he really pushes the son to be, you know, to it's all about testosterone and being strong and you know, you're not being weak. And the, I mean, even the whole point of Emilio Estevez, like his character, the fact that he's in detention is because he beat up some kid who was, you know, quote unquote weaker than him and whatever, just out of the blue, almost like a blind kind of rage thing. Mm-hmm. So yeah. And of course, the other part to it, which I think is really interesting, is that Emilio Estevez's character, not only is he kind of like that quote unquote stereotypical jock character from these kind of movies, but he follows orders. He doesn't like have a mind of his own. Mm. He does what people tells him to do. So he's left to his own devices. He won't be able to function. He needs people to push him to that sort of thing. And I think in the terms of the Atlanta episode here, Teddy Perkins is trying to justify that, hey, you need people like these kinds of fathers who are aggressive with their teaching style, who are aggressive about, you know, pushing their kids in practice and, you know, getting as much out of them from a young age and justifying it by saying, when you get older, you'll turn around and you'll be thankful that I did all this for you.
Mm-hmm. Or you might be screwed up in the head and living inside of a amusement park you built yourself.
Yeah, but at least you'll have a big amusement park all to yourself. Right? At least you'll have all this money. Right?
So there's so much I want to say about Michael Jackson that I'm not saying right now because we'll get letters.
You have all this legacy. You have this legacy behind you. You know, nobody can touch you.
Well, Michael Jackson, you have two different legacies, though, of course. You have the music one.
I'm talking about
the controversy.
The fictional world of Teddy.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So in the fictional world, you'll have this legacy behind you, right? No one will look at you and have anything to say about your music. They won't be able to touch it. It's immaculate, right? They might have something to say about your personal life, but the legacy you leave behind in terms of your impact on the music industry, mm-hmm. that's a big deal because clearly, and you saw it, that's why you saw when Darius walked over to the photos, he was shocked. He's like, oh my God, I didn't know that, you know, the owner of this piano. I didn't even know the owner of this piano, quote unquote, right?
But because I know everybody else who was around him at the time.
Right. So it's crazy that Darius came across this because he was looking for a piano with colored keys. Mm-hmm. Right? He doesn't even know the value of the piano until he gets there. And he's like, holy shit, this is a piano that was touched by a famous musician person. And not just any famous musician, a black famous musician person. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Right. So at this point, Darius is all the way creeped the fuck out.
as he should be.
And so he basically tries to speed along this process. And it's like, do I need to sign any tax documents or anything for the donation? And so as Teddy prepares the documents, Darius is like, he's sorry that he can't thank Benny himself personally. And Teddy's like, don't be. The disease is very advanced. And he doesn't like people seeing him that way. It's a very hard thing. He's like, yeah, I can imagine. No, you can't! You have no
Brandon,
idea.
You know the funny part? Let me tell you the funny part of this, right? So, I was watching this at night.
Why? Why, Heaven? Well, I guess that's, it comes on at night, but...
I was watching this at night. And when he was talking about... When Darius said that and he was talking about... And then... Teddy responded with, you know, his disease is very advanced, you know, don't be upset. His disease is very bad, blah, blah. I was about to say, sure, Jan. And then he said, you can't. And I was like, ah! And it was late at night. So I had to pause the episode and I do this thing. If it's late at night, I'm just like
3, 2, 1, 1, 2, 3. What the heck is bothering me?
I had to be like, listen, let me lower my voice because there are people. I live in an apartment complex and I have to be mindful of the fact because that scared the shit out of me. I wasn't expecting that. But then that's when the tables really turned, right? Like, mm-hmm. Okay, from now on out, you're going to get cold Teddy.
Right. So he tells Darius to sign the paperwork and he's like,
go ahead.
he has to go turn the elevator on. And so, you know, when he arrives, put the piano on it, and he wait for him in the lobby.
Old ass piano. Oh, I mean, old ass house with a elevator you have to turn on. What the hell?
I mean, you save that electricity bill.
Mm-hmm, I guess, but that's when Darius finds the blood on the piano.
Right, and he touches it like Fred on Scooby-Doo.
Jesus Christ.
Like I said,
don't do that, bro. You don't know where that's been. Whose blood do you think that is, Brandon?
That's a good-ass question, actually.
Because I was like, who... What is... So my thoughts at first was like, does Teddy self... Does he do self-inflicted pain? Self-inflicted wounds.
Does he play into his fingers bleed?
Do you bleed?
All right, Batman. You know, I rewatched that. I watched the extended cut last week because everybody said it was better.
Mm-hmm.
It's not.
What did you think?
It's. I mean, I guess it's more coherent. You learn more information, and okay. Jimmy Olsen actually says his name on camera.
Does that help?
No. It don't help a goddamn thing. The movie's still terrible. They still destroyed the characters of Superman and Batman and everybody connected to them.
Oh.
Because it was made by a man who does not like those characters at all and thinks they'd be cooler if they were raped in prison. That's what he said about Batman.
Wow. Really?
Hmm. And you entrusted your whole entire DC universe to this man to set the universe and the parameters for it. And now you're scrambling.
Same guy that took perfectly fine Themyscira outfits and made them more scandalous.
No, because people are saying that they're the same outfits, but I don't know.
Oh, no, they're not. Because I saw, somebody went through the trouble of getting a photo comparison between the two. Because in the first Wonder Woman movie, there was a photo shoot, a promo shoot where they show you all of them like all together posing. Mm-hmm. And then there was another photo shoot for this movie where they showed them all together posing. So somebody went through the trouble of finding those two photos, putting them side by side, and you clearly see that the women from Themyscira in Wonder Woman, they're covered up and their suits, their outfits are very practical. And the women in Justice League, you know, they look like they're about to go to the beach.
Did they are the same costumes with maybe pieces taken off, perhaps?
It didn't look like there were pieces taken off. The only thing that I saw that was kept on were the headpieces.
Okay.
But the other parts, like from the bottom down, it's different. There was mainly what Zack Snyder exposed was more a lot more midriff. So you see more of the women's musculature. Mm-hmm. In there, I don't really know why you need to do that though.
The same reason why you saw a Wonder Woman skirt at least three times, or at least two.
Yeah, because penis. Lord. So yeah, and I was like, okay, whatever, bro. Anywho, back onto Atlanta.
Right. So Darius takes the piano and fits it in the elevator. We don't get Lauren Hardy shenanigans, but we do get this elevator going on past the lobby into the basement, and I'm like. Yep. I'm like, this nigga about to die.
It's like, it says basement, and then he walks in, and Brandon's
the funniest shit is that the door opens up, he just stands there, and he just shrugs. Mm-hmm. He's like, okay, fate.
Yeah.
No. He says, fine, destiny.
Fine, destiny. Take me. Take me. He was like, listen, he got on the elevator and he was like, okay, Destiny, fuck me all the way up. Just do it. Just go.
And so, of course, down there, amid the creeping and crawling and the dripping, he finds...
And what's clearly there is the boiler room.
Right.
You're not in the basement. You're actually in the boiler room.
Right.
There's just too much shit going on here with steam... And cogs and pressure gauges. You're in the boiler room.
Yeah, I want to know if they hired the FOB people from Riverdale to work on this episode.
I don't know, but he turned around and he saw that man in that wheelchair. I was like, God damn it! What? Why would you scare me? Like I am black.
You already got high blood pressure.
I could have done a number of things to you. You do not think of on black people. Don't do that shit.
Right. And so he sees this dude in the wheelchair.
All covered up.
All covered up. And he has a blackboard in his hand, like a little portable chalkboard. And he writes on it, "Teddy, kill us both. What you want me to do? Gun in the attic." I'm not going to the attic to get your gun. Why don't you go get it yourself? And he points to the wheelchair on that.
He's like, okay, fair. Okay.
And so he's like, well, fine. I'll go get your gun. I'll put my piano up and I'll go get your gun from the attic.
Right.
And so he called. I forgot to mention while he was in the dad's exhibit, or the future dad's exhibit, Alfred texted him like, "You dead yet, nigga?"
Wow. I was like, "This is some real. This is some real black on black friend shit." Right.
And somebody pointed out that Darius's lock screen is like it's an artist painting of MLK, Obama, Rihanna, and a bunch of other black people from past, present, all playing. I think they were shooting dice, if I recall properly.
That's funny.
Yeah. So Darius, you know, he's on the phone with Alfred again. what do you say?
He's basically saying that, yeah. So basically,
yeah.
The mood is I'm definitely bringing the piano outside the house first, but I am definitely not going back in there. I just told him what I had to say.
Right, like because he's like he thinks that you know Teddy wants Darius to kill him.
Yeah, he thinks that Teddy is really definitely Teddy definitely a made up thing, and that you know. Teddy's depressed and just, yeah.
Yeah. He thinks that Teddy stuck into the basement, put on all them...
put on all that stuff.
That stuff. Wrapped his face up and is on one right
now. And I think that's what they were trying to convince us with the wheelchair that was behind Teddy when he had opened the door a crack upstairs. Right.
Yeah. And also they were wearing their same robe.
Right.
Yeah. Donald Glover and them had everybody on their Scooby-Doo mystery.
Yeah, at that point, I was just like, okay, so Darius is right. There's no two people. It's just one guy. So whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, fine. Continue the story.
And so he comes out and he sees that a car that wasn't there before with Benny Hope emblazoned onto it. In true 70s fashion, the car also looks like it's from the 70s as well. Is there and it's blocking so he can't open up the U-Haul to put the piano in it. And he hears a crash inside. And so he goes back inside. But before he goes up the stairs, he grabs a poker from the fireplace. And I just thought about the new remake of Sparkle, which I'm going to spoil for y'all because I don't want y'all to see it. Where Dolores knocks out Satin Sparks with the poker from the fireplace and kills him by accident. Spoiler alert for Sparkle 2012. Which is not a good movie. Neither is the original for that matter. Y'all probably will at me about that. The music is great. The movie is not. Let's go. So he goes upstairs holding his poker. And he finds Teddy Perkins. Well, at first he sees a projected screen. On the projected screen is clearly Benny Hope being tutored by the dad. And dad's like, again. No. He's being a very, you know, aggressive stage dad. And then he hears Teddy Perkins. This is my favorite song. He jumps because he didn't see him because he's like sort of kind of like sunk real deep into the chair.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, yeah, you park your car right in front of mine. And he's like, oh, I'll move it. Not I'll move it, but I'll move it.
Yeah. He said it in a matter of fact, like, well, obviously, I'll just move it.
And he's like, anything else?
Yes.
Where's your bathroom? It's up the stairs. Mm-hmm. Third door to the left. Mm-hmm. Right next to the attic. I was just up there myself. Do you know what I found? And he pulls out the fucking rifle that the brother asked for. He's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Congratulations. I chose you. You're my sacrifice.
Okay, so Brandon. Okay, so we're about to dissect the scene, okay?
Go ahead. Come on, Velma. Wipe the glasses off.
Because we're going to find the clues. We sure are. So here's the deal, Brandon. Remember when you were talking about sacrifice before?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So explain here this whole sacrifice thing. Is Benny, or sorry, at this point, we're obviously thinking that this is Benny.
Mm-hmm.
So Benny wants to sacrifice Darius for what?
He wants Darius,
because he wants Darius to kill him. Like, at least he wants Darius. Darius is right.
Yeah.
He wants Darius to kill him by making, but he obviously can't convince Darius to do it.
Right.
So he's going to try to stage a home invasion where Darius ends up killing Benny.
Right.
I guess. But I don't know how he's going to, but I was confused at that point, because if that's the case, then if you have Darius handcuffed to the chair, then it's not going to look like as if Darius did anything, because he was bound.
I'm guessing that he's crazy enough to not figure.
He didn't think this all the way through.
He didn't think this all the way through. Although, like, he probably could just shoot himself, have the gun there. I was surprised Darius just ended up going to jail in this episode anyway, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Because I was like, that would be a perfect frame up.
Yeah.
But yeah, because he got, like, that's what I thought was going to happen. He's going to shoot himself dead and try to frame Darius for it.
When I saw that they were going to bone Darius, I was like, okay, so this is his out. Because if I'm boned, no one can blame me for the shooting deaths of these people.
Right.
But yeah, that's why I was confused about the sacrifice. I was like, if you're gonna frame it, then make it look like as if Darius actually killed you. Don't bind him to the chair. It's not, like, that doesn't work. But whatever.
But yeah, because he's like, I want it to look real. The home invasion. You killed Benny because you were obsessed. And he's like, look, man, there is no fucking Benny, all right? He's like, exactly. So he makes him sit in the chair, handcuff himself into the chair. He has to drop the poker. And Darius gives this monologue, which is actually some beautiful goddamn writing, I have to say.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like, you know, not all great things come from great pain. Sometimes it's love. Not everything's a sacrifice. Sacrifices are necessary, Darius. Yeah, maybe. But your dad should have said, sorry. I'm sorry. Shit. Mm. I went through daddy shit myself. But when you're young, you try to just make it be okay and say everything is going to be fine. And that's just, you don't know the difference. But that don't give you an excuse to grow up and repeat the same shit over and over. It's like there's a what if factor. What if you would have been great at something else? Or if you had seen the love instead of all the other shit, like Stevie. And
he was just like,
Stevie was blind. He had his own sacrifices, but yeah, he wasn't blind dead. He saw through his music. He's like, that's beautiful, but wrong. No, he's like, that's beautiful, but wrong. And then the fucking elevator opens up and there's Benny. Benny, you're alive. So, clearly.
That's what shocked me, because I was just like, hold on a second. So that means Teddy.
He probably thought, Teddy, I'm going to say when he left Benny in the basement without no food or water prior to die of exposure of some sort.
But Brandon, Benny isn't supposed to be real.
Oh yeah, that was a shock. Benny was real. But I saw another theory online. You want me to tell you what that theory was?
Yeah, what's that theory?
They don't think it was Benny. They actually think that
it's his father?
The dad, yeah.
Yes, that's what I thought too. Good. All right, so somebody did come with that too. I was like, yeah, that's the father.
That Benny Hope and Teddy Perkins are the same person, but the dad is the guy in the wheelchair. Because it would make sense given that, you know, the age difference, you know.
So here's the crazy thing about it. The fact that Teddy is looking at the guy in the wheelchair and is like, Benny's alive? Like, you're alive, mm-hmm. right? That tone, it made me think like as if like, oh, wait a second, I've been making this up all the time, but this is real? I've believed in it so much that it got real. Okay, fine, whatever. I'll go with that. But the father, why would the father dress like that? Does the father, you think the father really does have a skin condition? Or
I looked up the actor who's playing the dad. I forgot his name. Something Haywood, but he's that color. He's light skinned. Not light, but not to wear. He probably didn't have to wear any makeup for that.
Derek Haywood.
Yeah, Derek Haywood.
So here's the deal, though. I feel like as if maybe, do you think that's like the father dressed like that as poetic justice? Like he knows that.
Teddy or Benny dressed him like that. He clearly is paraplegic and probably can't dress himself very well.
Okay. I see.
But yeah, so he comes in and while Teddy is sitting there like basically frozen with fear and shock, he takes the rifle and shoots the fuck out of Benny takes the rifle and shoots the fuck out of Teddy. Oh no, he's wearing makeup. This guy's wearing makeup under the mask. He's wearing the same like white makeup. So my bad. Forget what I said. He is wearing makeup. So no clue what's going on there. But so he rolls over to Darius and he's like, look, Benny, man, I'm sorry about what you had to go through. He asks Darius for the poker. So he sets the rifle up, props it up underneath his chin and uses the poker to pull the trigger. And kills himself, and you know, the force knocks him backwards out of the chair. Which, and you know, Darius is like freaked all the way out, understandably. And so he's sitting there, surrounded by these two dead bodies. Does he start to cry as well?
He shudders, and I don't know if that's crying or not.
I know he's certainly crying by the time he gets back to his U-Haul. Because then the police show up. Including the sheriff in an old Scooby-Doo sheriff's hat. So I'm not sure if they're actually in Pace. They might be up somewhere even further up north that's unincorporated. Or they might be somewhere in Vinings-ish that is... I mean, look at me trying to figure out stuff out. There's somewhere that's not in the city of Atlanta because a sheriff showed up and not the he's clearly wearing like sheriff clothes and not police clothes. Which aren't, listen. I mean, the Atlanta police don't dress like that, basically. The Fulton County police and the Cobb County police do.
Listen. This is a great mystery to unravel. Who is the man under all of that clothes? People want on one point, on one side, folks are like, oh, Benny is actually real. Maybe the theater, maybe the reel, the Super 8 reel that we were seeing is just the father teaching one of the children.
Right.
Right? Maybe he's only kept, maybe Teddy has kept
Benny like some dude. Maybe Teddy is Benny Hope to the public, but Benny was actually his own person as well and was kept. So there's another reference here. The movie Whatever Happened to Baby Jane?
I don't know this movie.
I haven't seen it, but I know enough about it, sort of kind of by like osmosis. It stars Joan Crawford and Bette Davis. Basically, it's about a child star and her sister. They, when they were kids back in the teens and 20s and young women in the 30s, they were sort of kind of like in competition with each other. So one sister tried to take out the other one with a car accident and just ended up paralyzing her. Mm-hmm. And so one sister who's played by Bette Davis is famous, but she's a drunk. She's an alcoholic. The other one, played by Joan Crawford, is a paraplegic who's kept locked in the basement.
Brandon, why do you think Teddy was shocked that quote-unquote Benny's alive?
So I think he intended to kill him. I think he thought he had. But I think he probably thought maybe either poison or starvation. And plus, he hadn't turned the elevator on. Remember that. There may not be stairs to the house.
Oh, that's right.
Or if they are, he might have sealed them off.
That's right. That's why he had to turn on the elevator. It's usually off, so that way whoever he left in the basement, they can't find their way back up.
Right, because he can't take up stairs anyway if he could, because he's in a wheelchair.
Right. So now the question is this actually Benny? Are they actually siblings? Or is that someone else? For example, his father.
And I think I think everybody will have a different answer. And I don't think Donald Glover will ever tell us.
I think it's his father, Brandon.
I think so too. That's where I'm going with it.
I think it's the dad. I think he left his dad down there. I think what you're saying about him dressing his father like that is on purpose.
Yeah.
He wants his father to live the life that he had.
Right.
He had to do all that stuff to cover himself up from the sun.
That would make sense given the thematics of the story.
Yeah. He wants him to see this is the life that you
put me into. Sort of kind of like,
so I'm going to show you how it feels.
If Michael could have kidnapped Joe and locked him in, like, I don't know, in the carousel of Neverland.
Yeah. Yeah. So I definitely agree that it's like, you know, walk a mile in my shoes, see how it feels now. Yeah. But I think you're right. He intended for him to just starve down there and die.
Right. And it's funny, he's talking about, speaking of Derek Haywood, he says he got the size for this part the night before they had to shoot. He did not get the entire script. He only got the scenes that he's in.
Okay.
And moreover, he says that whenever Donald Glover was in character the entire time. But remember, he's also the writer and the producer. So they had to keep asking Teddy for his advice. And Derek was like, who is this guy, Teddy? Why is his opinion so important?
Oh, wow.
Because he had no idea it was Donald Glover and all that makeup. But I have to tell you, they're going to get some awards for this shit. This is like one of the best put together episodes of TV I've ever seen.
No, they won't.
Yes, they will.
No, they won't.
Why not?
They won't because of slavery.
Well, Ali, you know they won Emmys last year for this show.
Okay. I'm not underestimating slavery.
I hate slavery. But I enjoyed the show this episode. I think it's the best put together episode, although it's my favorite because I'm not that dark of a person. But it's certainly like the best, like, as objective as I can get about, you know, something so subjective as evaluating, you know, film productions. I think it's certainly the best put together episode.
Well, it definitely made me I think I understand what it was trying to do. And it worked because I felt definitely shook up about it. I definitely felt like it made me think. It left me very pensive.
Oh, and speaking of the whole Teddy Perkins thing, in relation to like the Psycho relation to Tony Perkins and to Norman Bates, have you seen Psycho?
It's a long time ago.
Spoilers for Psycho, but I mean, this is like American pop culture by now. So you know that the key to the mystery of Psycho is that Norman Bates was dressing up as his mother and killing people. And in the movie, they didn't know that. So they were trying to sneak into the house and find the mother.
Right. Because
they thought the mother was the murderer. And so they find her in the basement. But they turn the wheelchair around and she's a cadaver.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still, even though it's, you know, it's an old black and white movie and they make a whole lot more gory things, it's still one of the scariest scenes I've ever seen in anything. When it's like Mrs. Bates turned around just as just a hollowed out skeleton.
This is reminds me of they tried to do a parody of this too. Not a parody, but they used this as they made homage to Psycho in one of the Criminal Minds episodes on CBS, where the killer here, the serial killer, he is acting on behalf of instructions from his mother.
Mm-hmm.
But when when the criminal investigators finally find his place of residence, because it always seems like as if it's him, it always seems like it's two people working.
Right.
And then when they break into the place and they find, you know, who he's been talking to all the time, it's his mother in a wheelchair and she is a cadaver as well.
She's like all Psycho. The way dead.
Yeah, she's all the way dead. And it's creepy because all throughout the episode, the way they've angled the camera when the criminal, because they show you the criminal in this episode before he goes out to do all this stuff, right?
Right.
And he's always seen to be talking to someone and always trying to take care of someone in a wheelchair, and we just assume it's his mother.
That's exactly from Psycho. That's exactly because that's how Norman Bates is. He's always talking to his mother. And Alfred Hitchcock went the extra length to give you a voice for the mother that is a woman's voice. But it turns out that Norman Bates was just, he spoke in his mother's voice that convincingly. Yeah,
they did the same thing for the Criminal Minds.
Yeah.
They gave it a voice to them. So you're assuming that, oh, okay, so it's this woman and she keeps on telling him all this stuff and she keeps pressuring him and he ends up, you know, being a serial killer, blah, blah, and nothing the son ever does will ever please her, you know, and we end up thinking that it's her fault. She needs to be put down. She's dead. She's been dead.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm watching the scene now where Vera Miles finds the cadaver, and then of course Norman Bates comes in with the wig on, and then John Gavin, aka Mr. Steve from Imitation of Life, tackles him to the ground and pull in and in true like sort of kind of stagey 60s filmmaking, pulls the wig off. And the dress, so you can show the audience, oh, it's Norman. Yeah. And they correct the viewer mouth. She's like, oh! Yeah, Psycho is a lot. In a good way. It's one of my favorite movies. I mean, maybe I am that dark. Shit. Because, I mean, movie even ends with Norman Bates speaking in his mother's voice in like the final scene. Like in voice, in like thought balloon voiceover, when he's in jail, he's speaking like this. He's thinking, but it's the mom's voice that he's thinking in. Where he's like, "I'll show them. They think I'm crazy. I'll show them I'm harmless. I would even swat that fly who's crawling on me. They'll see and they'll know. They'll say, why she wouldn't even harm a fly." He looks in the camera and smiles, a little creepy smile. And that's the end of the picture. Psycho's a good-ass movie. This is a good-ass episode. I want to watch it again. I've already seen it twice, but I want to watch it again. I want to see more details. I want to see what more I can find.
Listen, I have to be in a place to watch this movie again because I'm sorry. The birthplace of the sound effect. It's.
Oh, you're talking about Psycho. I thought the episode. I've seen Psycho so many times.
Oh, okay.
I will watch Psycho over again.
I'm like, oh my god.
When he chopped that woman up in the shower. Don't watch the remake. That remake is awful. It shows how important acting and directing are to a good story. Because they told the same story shot for shot with just different actors and a different director, and it was so bad. But also because they try to make it look gorier as well, which doesn't work.
that's not the idea. Yeah, that's not the point of the movie.
It's, right.
Why do people think that making things gorier will actually...
Like, even with this, the gore actually was the relief of this episode. Because it's like, they're dead now. Like, I mean, you really creeped out, but it's like, the horror is over, basically. By the time we get to the gore. The creepy shit, the hard to watch stuff is him wandering through this house, knowing that this man, like, is crazy. Okay. I do want to say, when he goes up to that little that screening room, there's like one of those standees you see in a store to sell keychains on. I guess this is part of the whole museum thing.
Mm-hmm.
I want to get a good look at this screening room too. But yeah, this is a good ass episode, man. Anything else you want to say in conclusion?
Wow. As much as possible, go and have discussions with your friends about this episode.
Yeah.
Everyone's going to have a different interpretation, like Brandon said.
Yeah.
And I would encourage folks to like talk as much as possible.
Absolutely.
Donald Glover is really doing some, he's really doing some big things, and it makes me think, it makes me feel even more regret that he's...
Regret?
Deadpool, no.
Oh, the Deadpool, yes. Did you see Deadpool, the script that he wrote after they tried to fire him?
I both read the script, and then one of my favorite YouTube channels did a dramatic reading of said script. And when I tell you I am just like laid out on my carpet floor,
and he read that shit in like a part of like 2 hours that night. Listen.
Oh, you know it. Because there's too many recent
who bit Beyonce and shit. Like, listen, your fave could possibly never. My fave neither.
Your fave could never, never, ever, never. In your wildest dreams, they could never. Because when he said, when they got to the point in the dramatic reading where his phone went off, and he was like, "Sanaa Lathan, what the hell?" I was like, "Oh my god, why?" Deadpool is about that mess. He really is.
Yeah, I'm going through the timeline right now just to score the context. I always avoid social media, Atlanta Post, which I watched the episode. Somebody did point out another person, I guess Matt Zoller Sites on Twitter.
Mm-hmm. Matt Zoller Sites, yeah.
He pointed out that the whole Tony Perkins, Teddy Perkins Psycho reference.
Okay.
Yeah, a lot of people caught that, like the Teddy Tony thing. Which I was hoping they would. Foxy Moron says, "Bro, I love Atlanta so much. This nigga Don Glover funny as fuck for making the newest episode a black version of Psycho."
Oh my god! Yeah, and the thing about this though, you know, when you see an episode like this, it really makes you feel like as if, like, Don Glover isn't just... For people who are there who are just like, well, this is just a fluke. This is not a fluke, people.
That nigga talented.
You could tell. Yeah. The other thing is, like, you could tell that there's research done.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just, ooh, this just popped into my head. This would make a really good plot. There's clearly references made in this episode and all other episodes. There are callbacks to things mm-hmm. that we've all experienced. This dude is talking to people and he's doing research. Yes, he's young, but he knows because he's doing the work.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Let's go ahead and get out of here. I'm going to quiz you. Ali, where can people find us online?
You can find us online at ssnpodcast.com. Mm-hmm. You can also find us on all social media at ssnpodcast. Mm-hmm. You can find us on Google Play, iTunes, Snitcher, and
Everywhere else, great podcasts are found. That's all
that's
you need.
True.
Look,
that's true.
Look at you. Fist bump. Fist bump the microphone.
And I could. And I didn't even need. I didn't even need that. That
the little cheat sheet.
Yeah, I didn't even need it.
See, look at you.
I'm changing.
I was about to say that.
Mm-hmm. I know.
See me. I am changing. Oh, wow. See me. I am trying. Okay, let's go. This has been to Say Something Nice podcast. I am Brandon.
And this is Ali.
And we'll see you guys next time.
Bye.